Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show, where business owners, professionals, and entrepreneurs gather to discover playmaking ideas for success. Your host is internationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author, Steve Klein, who sits down with fascinating playmakers who have made themselves and their company successful. Steve will introduce you to CEOs and executives who discuss their playmaking path toward success. And now, it's time to meet this show's playmaker. Here's your host, Steve Klein.
Stephen Covey said, leadership is a choice, not a position. Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today is a guest who has made the leadership choice. Today's Playmakers company manages hospitals. With us today is a CEO who's been running his business for over 30 years. This great playmaker is Scott Smith. Scott is CEO of Medical City Dallas Management. Now, Scott is also board chair and founding partner of Med Networks, a medical application service provider, as well as a hosting company and support provider for practice management and electronic medical records. Scott served as vice president of the board of trustees of the Carrollton Farmers Branch Independent School District for 16 years and is a member of the board of trustees of the Texas Association of School Boards for 3 years. He received his B.S. in Mechanical Engineering and an M.S. in Engineering Mechanics from the University of Texas, Arlington. Well, Scott, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you. Glad to be with you.
Well, my question is, so everybody can find out in addition to myself, what does Medical City Dallas Management do?
In 1974, we designed and built Medical City Dallas and have operated it since that time. We're a little bit under the radar sort of a company in that we are here to make the tenants that lease space at Medical City, the anchor tenant being Medical City Dallas Hospital, and the physicians that support that as efficient and as they can be in what they're trying to do in the delivery of healthcare.
Well, you say your largest tenant is Medical City Hospital and you have physicians here, so I would think part of your goal is to keep the property filled, but we were talking before the show started, it also seems as if you're looking for a certain kind of physician to be a part of this property. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. We're less concerned about keeping it full than we are about keeping it full with the right sorts of doctors, because the secret to Medical City is that the physicians who are here are the ones who work together well and who need one another and who need a relationship with a hospital like Medical City Dallas Hospital. And so we listen to what their needs are, and those are the folks that we actually want to be here. We have been known to tell some people who wanted to be here that we thought maybe they might have a fit better somewhere else. So the real estate does not drive the equation. It's the operation.
We were talking again a little bit before we started about the type of hospital, the type of property that you have here, which is different than other hospital properties, and the type of physicians that you have at your property too. This is a property that has physicians that go beyond what you see at a lot of other hospitals. Tell us about that and what type of work that they do.
It is a place that tends to attract what I would call a more entrepreneurial physician and those who really know they can do what they can do well as long as they're allowed to do it, and who are pushing the state of the art of medicine delivery pretty much all the time. Some world-class physicians who have done world-recognized things here at Medical City include things like the separation of congenitally joined Siamese twins, joined at the brain. Both of them have lived. In each case, one of those surgeries has been performed here, and they're all functioning. Just last week, surgery was done here inside the womb to correct a problem that, if it continued to exist after birth, was uncorrectable, and that problem appears to be completely removed. So there are some really significant things that happen in a place like Medical City Dallas Hospital. And it's made possible by the physicians who are here that are not really a part directly of the hospital, not employed by the hospital, but work together as a team.
it seems like in your 30 plus years working with this company that you've developed a certain culture and expanded it to the physicians in the hospital. Is that correct?
Yes, and I would say that the the founder of Medical City Dallas, Bob Wright, who was a group practice manager at the time this was conceived, knew what physicians needed to do their best work. And Medical City Dallas was designed around that idea, that physicians need a place to do what they do best in an efficient way, with close proximity to the outpatient part of their practice and the inpatient part of their practice. So a big part of the success of Medical City was to make the real estate tight so that a doctor wouldn't waste much time going from inpatient things to outpatient things. An example would be that if you're delivering a child and you're just down the hall from the labor and delivery room, you're in the building at all times. So a labor and delivery nurse can do certain things that wouldn't be allowed if the doctor were across the street or down the street or across town. So it's much more efficient for the patient and for the physician in this kind of real estate.
Let's talk about the management company side. This is a larger property compared to other hospitals. There are three major buildings here. There's a lot of real estate. We're talking again before the show started about how much real estate is here. How large is your employee base to run this hospital facility?
Well, there are about 10,000 people a day in and out of here, different shifts and at different times. So it is a fairly large place. There are 2 million square feet of space, highly utilized space. So there's a lot of turnover during the day of patients and visitors.
So a lot of people are going through. Now, you mentioned 10,000. Is that the physicians work here? Is that patients, a combination of both of them?
That's staff, physicians, and patients.
Well, let's go back a little bit, because I mentioned that you received your BS and MS in engineering. But was this what you wanted to do when you got out of school?
Never even thought about this. As a matter of fact, I liked solving problems. That's what engineers do. That's what they're trained to do. And I found out since that's pretty applicable even outside what are normally considered engineering professions. Problem solving is kind of something you need to do wherever you are. And if you enjoy doing it, it makes it a little bit easier. The career path to here was nothing anyone could have designed. I certainly didn't conceive it. I was just in the right place at the right time when certain opportunities presented themselves. And it's a somewhat long story about how I ended up here, but I've never regretted it. It's been interesting every day.
So how did you develop your leadership style or your leadership skills, or both?
By immersion. Fairly early on in my engineering career, I designed a few products that became successful in the marketplace, and we had to figure out how to manufacture them and how to deliver them as well as selling them, and I had to begin to put together a team that could do all of those things at a pretty early state in my career. And so I learned by the baptism of fire and knew there were some things I didn't learn in engineering school that I needed in order to be well-rounded in the business world. And so I got that help through SMU in some postgraduate work.
But I would think a lot of what you know and do, because you've been doing this for a while, was on-the-job training?
Was, most of it.
And you have been doing nothing but leadership. So looking over the, I guess, at least the last 30-plus years that you've been here, what are some of the most valuable lessons you have learned as a leader and or running a business like this?
I kind of think of three that are maybe most important, and they're maybe a little different from ones you've heard from other people that you've asked that question to. And the first one is that you need a good story. And I mean that in the oldest definition of the word story. I think it means to me that you have asked yourself the questions that other people might ask so that you know what you're doing. You believe you have a good answer for most of the questions that going in that direction will generate. Because once you get that straight in your own mind, you can tell it to other people in a convincing way, and people are more excited about a story than they are about a person they kind of are looking for a purpose and a cause to make a difference. And a conceived story, I think, helps people go in that direction with you, and you can't ever do it alone. The second one I would say is you can't push a rope. By that I mean you kind of have to be on the leading end of things. You can't be sitting on the sidelines and trying to convince other people to go up to the front lines. You need to lead by example. You need to be able to motivate people to see your vision and to buy into it and be a part of it and see what it's going to do to benefit them. And then you need to empower them, and kind of in that order, because empowerment's a little bit hard to do early on when you don't know for sure what the buy-in is or what the capabilities of each person are, but you kind of have to let that out a little at a time until people do know they are empowered. I think motivation comes in waves. It's not something you can do all the time, and you can't do it all at one time, but you kind of have to make sure that people are properly motivated along the way. And the example, obviously, is just an everyday, every moment sort of. You better be convinced of what you're trying to get other people to do and be willing to do it yourself. And I think they pay more attention to what we're doing than what we say most of the time. The third one would be you can't do it by yourself. You need a team. And I think most people in leadership know that extremely well. And you need a team not just to implement, but you need a team to help conceive a proper solution to a problem. You have to trust your team. You have to be loyal to them if you want them to trust you, and you have to instill in them how they have to trust the other members of the team as well, and that's a little scary sometimes. We have to reward people, we don't want to reward those that aren't playing fair with other members of the team, so there's some balance in all of that, as there is in everything. I think you have to be honest with people. You have to tell them the good along with the bad, both about their own performance, about the performance of the company, where our failures have been. Let them share in the responsibility as well as the successes and failures. And then I think being patient with them is really important. Building chemistry takes time.
Well, I'm going to ask you a question about number one in a moment. Let me start with number three. You mentioned empowerment. That, I would think, as a leader is difficult, because you're giving up the, in many cases, authority or power to somebody else to allow them to make their own mistakes. And it's very hard to sometimes sit back and swallow and say, okay, I need to let them do that. How did you develop the ability to be able to empower your people?
Well, I think the first thing you have to come to in your own mind is, I can't do it all. I think most of us who have gotten to a certain point in our life trust ourselves more than we do anyone else for a while. And it is a monstrous step to go from one to anything, any other number, because it does require trust, and it requires empowering people to do it. And they can't succeed at it if you don't empower them. And once you understand that, then it's a scary moment. But it's a necessary moment if we're going to be able to move forward and be bigger than we can ever be by ourselves. So it's just one of those necessary things. I think everyone has to figure out for themselves when that time is, and then just trust the process.
You mentioned, as I wanted to reference number one, was storytelling. You had mentioned to me earlier that many of the physicians here have a lot of passion. You mentioned one physician that was here till after midnight, working and probably enjoying himself. You also mentioned the fact that you have lots you could say about this community here at Medical City. You have apparently lots of stories to tell. It sounds like you're also a storyteller, and that's one way that you communicate with your people. Would I be correct in guessing that?
No, it's true. I think if the story of Medical City Dallas was conceived a long time ago, and it's like any story that has value and merit that's a part of the culture of the place, it needs to be repeated frequently, not just for the benefit of those who've heard it but need to really buy into it by having it repeated to them, but there are always people who've never heard it before who need to hear it.
You seem like you have a lot of passion with what you do, and you mentioned that and looking for that when you have physicians have offices here. How did you develop your passion? Because, again, you came from engineering, and you said it was more or less happenstance that you got in position to run this property. Have you always been a passionate person with everything you've done?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I think everyone has to have a passion if they're going to get out of their comfort zone and do anything that might make a difference. But I would call myself a person who tries desperately to balance passion with reason, and I think that's the engineering side of me. It takes both, I think, because there's a ditch on both sides of the road, and it's easy to end up in either one of them. Your passion can drive you into a ditch very quickly, and if you don't have any passion and you're only driven by reason, you can end up in the other ditch. And so I think the challenge of everything in life is finding a balance point between these things that are drivers.
Well, you've been here for a little over 30 years, which is probably more than three-quarters of the time that Medical City has been here. What legacy do you want to leave as a CEO of Medical City Dallas Management?
Well, hopefully that the people who come behind me don't have to fall in all the same holes that I fell in. I think that's hopefully the most important thing that we can make a difference in life. Just be a part of the solution to future problems that can be attained in a shorter time than it might have taken us to figure out some of those same things. I think another thing is that the things that I believe are important can have some lasting value to somebody else, not just continue the story, not just as it may relate to Medical City Dallas, but in their own personal lives and in their careers, that it might be easier than it might otherwise have been, because some who've gone before them have helped ease that. Also, that I might have contributed in some way to the next generation of leaders, whether it's here or somewhere else. And to me, it's not nearly as important when we're gone whether people remember our name as it is whether they remember some of the things that we believed were important and that might be helpful to them and those who come along behind them.
Well, let's continue with that and talk about those who are still building their careers. Is there any specific advice that you would give them as they are building and develop their career to help them get to a position similar to yours?
Well, I think the first thing is awareness. Where are you in the big scheme of things, in your own career, in your mind, and in the world at this time, and in the company that you're a part of at the time? Just where are you? Are you really fully aware of where you fit in right now? And then I think it's possible to chart a course to where you'd really like to be. But I think just spending enough time to do a little bit of self-analysis and be honest with yourself about where you really are, as opposed to where we'd like people to believe we are or where we'd like to hope we are, is an important initiating step, you know, to know how the system works. And by that I mean how the world works, how your community works, how your company works, what are the rules of engagement, how is it most likely that you're going to get from point A to point B? Just how does it work? And then not trying to take two steps at a time. Take it as it comes, and not try to manipulate the system once you figure out what it is, but to earn your way. People are recognized for, in the long term, the difference they make. Not by what they say, not by how they are shrewd, for the most part, but how they make a difference. And then, you know, I believe if you have the right stuff and you're just doing the right things most of the time for the employer that you have or the partners that you're engaged with, that you'll be recognized. So you work on your stuff, not on manipulating things. And then I think one of the most important things that I learned when I was trying to find out things outside my engineering training was how to be a good listener. It's amazing when we actually study the art of listening, how we begin to understand what a poor listener we probably are. And I learned a term in dealing with that called active listening, that it was something I was just unaware of, that you have to work at listening well to what other people are saying. And if we don't hear what they're saying, it's really hard to help them solve a problem or get them to help us solve a problem. We've got to know where they're coming from. So being a good listener is important. And then kind of a follow-up to that is, if we do a good job of that, we're going to understand not everybody sees things the same way we do. In fact, most people don't see things exactly like we do. So it's important to understand how they see things and to celebrate the fact that their perspective is different from ours and can add to other ways we can solve problems than what we're seeing as obvious to ourselves. And so we begin to learn that the strength of a board, for instance, or the strength of a team is its diversity. We want other people to see things differently. Instead of trying to convince the world to see everything like we do, celebrate the fact that the fact they don't can help us move further down the road faster collectively. I think it's important to understand that no matter how convincing we are or how good our ideas are, we're never going to get the whole world to see them like we do. And that's just a really basic truth. I think that the sooner we discover that and admit it, the better off we are. We're then spending our energy to try to put all these pieces together that don't seem to fit than we are about trying to size them all to be like a cookie and come out of the same cookie cutter. And I think just to reiterate something that I said earlier, I think it's important to have passion, but passion that is under control. And that's just a balance point that every one of us have to figure out for ourselves. We're driven by passion, but we're influencing people usually not by our passion but by our reason. We normally can't get most people to share all of our passion because they have their own and that's a good thing, but we might be able to sell them on our logic.
And what I think I heard you say, to summarize in a few words, some of the key elements as they're building a career is passion, listening effectively, having a plan, being focused, and being patient. And doing what you enjoy doing.
Absolutely.
Very, very good advice. Well, Scott, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
You're welcome. I'm very pleased to have spent some time with you.
You are definitely a playmaker, and a playmaker is somebody that's making things happen. And over the last 30 years, you've definitely made something happen here at Medical City. Congratulations.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Scott Smith. Scott is CEO of Medical City Dallas Management. This has been a terrific show. It's been great having all of you join us and listening. Join us again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com, where you can get all of our past episodes. That's PlayMakersTalkShow.com, and we're going to be back with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join Steve again at PlayMakersTalkShow.com for more interviews with interesting and successful playmaking CEOs and executives.